You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of September 6th, 2017, and have you paid your space union dues lately?
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Alborn.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. This week, we're going to space.
Space. The land that time for... Oh, no, that's not the one.
To serve as a lower class contracting group of ragtag individuals just working their way through personal problems.
We're just trying to get a little bit of loyalty bucks for our family, all right?
God, it's like space trucking without all the chest bursters and everything. This week we're going to talk about Tacoma. We're going to do a debrief. We are going to heavily spoil the game. It is a heavily story-driven game, so I would recommend playing it. It's not very long, so it's pretty manageable.
Yep.
But also, there's a fair amount of mechanical things that I want to make sure to discuss. And also, it's a follow-up to Gone Home.
That's right. A game that I think you and I both really enjoyed.
I liked Gone Home, and I think even in retrospect, as the walking simulator has become a more mature genre,
yeah,
I think it's aged pretty well.
I was just about to ask you that, though, because I'm not entirely convinced it has, and I haven't gone back to it, to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be, I don't know, actually, maybe you're right. There's not a whole lot of innovation in the walking simulator space.
There isn't, but Fulbright is the one that has done most of it.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair enough.
The put-back mechanic?
Yeah, that's still pretty great. Yeah. Why can I not put anything back in any other game?
Yeah.
Well, I would actually say Hellblade, which we talked about last week.
Yeah, there's certain segments where it's very... And they do it in a different way, where everything looks very nice, but it's non-interactive.
Yep.
What Remains of Edith Finch, we played earlier this year.
We did, that's true.
They innovated in land shark technology.
That's true. That's definitely more land sharks. God, that was a great scene. I would say it was innovative in the way that the stories flowed together in a especially unique way.
Yeah. But I think what's unique about the Fulbright approach is that the non-flippant genre that people use for this is immersive sim.
Yes.
Which also puts things like Dishonored and BioShock the same genre.
Yeah.
But because this came from people that actually worked on BioShock, there's a much more interactive sense of the world where you can touch every single thing.
Oh yeah, you can throw darts at faces. It's great.
It's they index pretty heavily on the immersive side.
Yeah.
Or I guess on both, the sim side too, where they're simulating everything from picking up a piece of paper to playing darts to wandering around an actual spaceship with simulated gravity and so on and so forth.
And even though it's space, and I imagine actual space to actually be pretty sparse, because not just actual space, but like you can't just have random shit floating around in your space station, right? That can't be good for you.
I was thinking about that, because even in her small ship, there was tiny bolts floating around. And I was like picking them up out of the air. And I was like, this doesn't seem safe.
Yeah, like maybe I should put this somewhere. Yeah. What if I accidentally swallow this while I'm sleeping?
What if it just floats into my eye as I'm...
I mean, I know that the space station in Tacoma has like artificial gravity because it's spinning. But what if that artificial gravity failed? You know? You would have fucking juice packs everywhere. Like, it would be such a mess.
There'd be poignant personal trinkets just floating around.
Yeah, little memorabilia, letters from loved ones. I do think that they did innovate. I think the biggest innovation is the way that you experience a story.
Yeah.
Is one in which you encounter basically like a hologram audio logs. But I think that's a big improvement over the actual audio.
I was just going to say this may be the apex of the audio log.
I think so.
What else could you do with the audio log?
I would argue that Hellblade with its audio design does the audio log pretty... That is the apex of the audio portion of the audio log.
Yeah, but even in Hellblade, it is simply audio.
Yeah, that's true. It's spatial audio, so that matters.
So that's true. So the physicality of the audio, but Tacoma's big hook is that you are walking through a spaceship that is blanketed in AR cameras recording yes. everything, and then through your AR rig you can play back the recording of the AR yeah. and so you can see people, the frames of people walking around in the environment that you're sitting in.
Yes.
You can also scrub through it, which I yes. had no idea that this so I
after, that is the best part.
After this game got essentially rebooted in terms of its aesthetic style, yeah. I kind of went,
did it get rebooted? Yeah. I don't remember that.
If you look at the original trailers for it, it looks fairly different from what it looks really? Like now.
Was it cartoonish? Was it like Looney Tunes?
No, it was more, it looked more like Rapture. It was kind of an Art Deco style
oh,
thing.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Wow, interesting. Yeah. Oh, I see why.
Yeah.
In the context of the story. Yeah. Okay, interesting.
And so, yeah, they basically, I think the game was originally supposed to come out much earlier than it was, but they delayed it for a while. But anyway, the point is, after that reboot, I kind of went dark on it and didn't really watch anything mm-hmm. more. And so I had no idea that the AR scenes that you were watching were also controllable by you in terms of fast forwarding and yeah. rewinding.
Yeah.
It's the biggest innovation in audio logs.
It is.
Since audio logs.
Yeah, something that we've had on VHS.
Fast-forwarding and rewinding.
Be kind, rewind, everybody. In an interview with Steve Gaynor that I was reading on Glixel, they asked him a series of questions, and one of the things that came up during that interview was the play that I saw for a second time in New York.
I was just going to mention that.
Yeah, Sleep No More.
Yeah, Sleep No More.
And one of the things that he talks about with that is the fact that multiple storylines are happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see a story happening elsewhere, you kind of want to move over to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this game is really cool where you can follow people through doors,
yeah.
see someone's encounter, rewind, and then mm-hmm. start the story again from their meeting.
Yeah.
It is a really cool interactive way of having some agency in which elements of the story you're hearing at once.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I don't think it does a very good job of rewarding and or / punishing your choice. Like, it doesn't mm-hmm. really matter who you follow because mm-hmm. you can always rewind and then follow that next person.
Yeah.
There's not like a one and done kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like that, that there's a classic train game where this happens, but Pathologic.
Oh, The Last Express.
Yeah, The Last Express yeah. or Pathologic, which is yeah. the game that I'm more familiar with.
Yeah.
There are moments in those narratives where certain conversations will happen at certain times at certain locations.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm making a connection. Keep going.
Yeah, like in Pathologic, there's a conversation that happens at like 3 o'clock in the city church. And if you're not there at 3 o'clock, mm-hmm. you will miss out on that conversation. Now, you go through the story of Pathologic multiple times, so there are opportunities to go back.
Mm-hmm.
But that experience of having to commit to something and knowing you're missing out on something else,
mm-hmm.
I think kind of makes it a little bit more exciting and tense because mm-hmm. you know that you're going to have to do some of your own mental gymnastics to piece the story together based upon what information you have. And then the decision to investigate and gain clues feels yeah. like they're earned by you because you're the one that decided this is where I can get X amount of information. I don't think that really exists in Tacoma. Yeah. That's not necessarily to say it's a bad thing because so much of the story is not like, it's not a fucking murder mystery.
Yeah, the point is a single story without a fail state.
Right, yeah.
Let me talk to you about a little game called The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask.
Okay, yeah.
It had the exact same thing where you had to go through that 72-hour cycle.
Yep.
And there were certain quests that if you just didn't get to by the end of 24 hours, it was gone for yeah. the rest of the 2 days. But that game is a Groundhog's Day mechanic.
Yep.
You loop, but you loop the entire game
yeah.
rather than yeah. the two-minute segments yeah. that you might be interested
in. But what's great about that, right, is there are times when you've unlocked new areas, so now mm-hmm. you can experience, and it gains you like new insight. And there's mm-hmm. a sort of, I think, anticipation that comes with the wait
mm-hmm.
that maybe is rewarded.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think, I don't know, it's a divisive game, and this mechanic in itself is divisive because of what you point out, which is the reality of wasted time is a mechanic.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I missed this. Whoops, I wasted my time. I either need to be cool with missing it or I need to rewind and do it all over again.
Yeah.
That is the punishment. And I think that's a pretty divisive. People really have strong feelings about if the game is fair, if the game is wasting their time, so
yeah.
on and so forth.
Yeah.
I was really back and forth as to whether I even liked it for probably the first half an hour of playing
that particular mechanic.
Yeah, just period. Yeah. Because there were certain, But I think I started approaching it differently. When I first started the first couple AR scenes, I would just kind of watch them from back to front.
Yeah.
And then rewatch them and not use the fast forward or rewind or not be cool with, you know, branching or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was kind of boring. So I was like, okay, well, here's another 3-minute run. And now I have another 3-minute run. But then something, after a while, something clicked and I just became okay with not watching an entire run, or I would just branch off to another character and they'd be like, oh, okay, this is when these two characters meet. So I actually only have to rewind to here and then watch the rest of it. You know, the characters intersect in ways that if you're paying attention, you actually don't have to rewind to the beginning
because
you're just following one character.
That's true. Yeah. Or you could skip the middle part to get to the next point. Yeah.
I don't know. What was your reaction to it when it first started up?
I really liked it at first. Mm. And one of the very first moments where you do it is the room where they're celebrating Obsolescence Day. Yay! Yeah. So they're having a little like office party, essentially.
Mm.
And I think that you start in the room of EV, who's like essentially the captain of the Tacoma ship.
Yeah.
And she's alone, and then everybody calls them in. So basically, people who are in four different locations come together and then split apart again. So you're sort of forced to do this thing where you're coming together and splitting apart again.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that because it felt kind of like detective work.
Yeah.
It actually grew on me later as the game progressed that I was just less and less interested in it because I don't think they really did a good job of capturing what's interesting about having to choose to follow someone and then changing your mind. Like, piecing a story together, I think, is an interesting concept.
Mm.
And I think that Gone Home and this game piece the story together for you.
Mm.
There are background elements that I can piece together by looking at certain articles of information.
Yeah.
For the most part, everything that you find is relevant to someone's backstory.
Mm.
So it still felt a little... I felt a little spoon-fed, to be honest, for the duration of the game. And not because the mechanic is bad, but I think they just didn't... It didn't feel like they explored that to its fullest potential.
Yeah. I mean, this was the... I remember this was Ian Bogost's criticism of Edith Finch.
Yeah.
You know, a video game is not a movie type of thing. Yeah. And
he's not wrong. He's just an asshole.
Yeah. I mean, but I mean, I think my big defense of that is, I mean, Fulbright is making games about very linear experiences about certain people's perspectives.
That's true.
That aren't about you forming your own opinion. It's about you considering the perspective of a different person.
Yes.
Which is good as long as it's only 3 hours.
Yes.
Because when it's a game, you know, like you're inherently wanting to make it your own and that you... I think a person can only have so much patience for that.
That's a really good point. Yeah. I think I was probably just about running out as the game wrapped up.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it matters a lot more if you do... I felt like there was a lot more optional things in this game than there were in Gone Home.
Yeah.
Just in terms of the story, like learning about the various characters.
Every
stuff.
Single person's personal cabin you don't need to go into.
Yeah, that's true, actually. And even in the personal cabins, there's always... maybe not in the cabin themselves, but there's always in their storyline some sort of locked closet or drawer or something that you can just walk right by.
Yeah.
And none of it is mandatory.
Yeah. I just wonder how, you know, if Fulbright came to the story and was like, okay, we're going to let people experience this story, but they're locked to one person. They can rewind conversations. Mm. They could try to listen in through walls maybe, but like they must follow one person.
Yeah.
What kind of experience they could create out of that?
Yeah.
You know, like, I think it would be interesting to come at this type of game with unreliable narrators, with limited information, and see what kind of stories that you can share with the player.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say, you know, again, I hate criticizing games for what they're not, but I think that would be an interesting approach given their expertise at this type of game and even this particular mechanic of sort of rewinding through time.
Do you think Gone Home was more like that because you were looking at a diary of what this person thought their parents were all about? Or, 'cause to me, this felt like more of a documentary than...
Yeah, I agree. No, anything. I think you're right. I think Gone Home was more like that, especially when it came to the father and the father's relationship to his family and the uncle, because the information that you're gleaning isn't in like a handily put together like dossier on yeah. their desktop, you yeah. know, like none of these characters in Tacoma are like browsing porn websites. Yeah. Like they're all having crucial information like bank statements and stuff.
Well, there's a lot of corrupted files. Yeah. So you never know what's in there. But it's all porn. That's true. AR porn.
But in Gone Home, like, you know, you're gleaning the alcoholism of the father from yeah. letters that could be very far apart in the house. Like yeah. they're not back to back.
Right.
Or from the items that are in the room. Like, oh, he spent yeah. a lot of time here. And then you see four empty brandy glasses. Yeah. Right. Like,
it's true.
There are moments where you're interpreting the environment, whereas there was less environmental interpretation in Tacoma than I think there was in Gone Home.
Yeah.
And most of the character information for each of them, like each character on the ship, of which there are six, have their own section.
Yeah.
And most everything about them is pretty thoroughly clear and understandable from that section. You don't necessarily have to, you know, to understand the botanist, you don't have to experience the medical officer's story yeah. first. You know?
Yeah, that's true. It's also just more because you're dealing with actual documents and you're able to triangulate the interpretation between six people.
Yeah.
It feels more kind of eyewitnessed.
Yeah.
And less, it feels less like a novel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it more, almost more invasive.
Oh, definitely. Kind of weird yeah. I mean, at first they were really pushing that like privacy angle yeah. because when you get onto the ship, it's like, oh, you're giving up the right because you're being recorded.
Yeah.
And at first I was role-playing like a corporate stooge. And every time I found a personal item, I would just throw it on the ground. Like, I don't yeah. give a fuck about this. It's not yeah. useful. You know, like just tossing things yeah. aside.
Yeah. You're just looking like letter to mom, toss.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
you know, old diary from a teenage. Yeah. Oh, this was actually the person from Gone Home, toss.
So going back to the documentary idea, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think this might be a really cool system to use for telling an actual real-world documentary.
Yeah.
Like, there was a Netflix documentary that's pretty good about, I forget where it happened, but the sniper that was on, like, a university campus.
Oh.
And, like, shot at students.
Oh, like the,
Maybe it took place a long time ago.
University of Ohio, maybe?
Maybe. I don't remember when or where it was, but they animated certain scenes and then basically had people talking about their experience of being on
Kent State, actually.
Maybe. Their experience of being on campus and living through that moment, right?
Mm.
I could see an actually really interesting documentary that had actual audio conversations between people yeah. or even fictionalized some of it, right? Yeah. Like, if the way that you experience certain documentaries where they do, like, dramatic retelling, if the dramatic retelling was kind of like this, where you're living in that space, that might actually be a really cool mechanic to experience sort of interactive documentaries.
I think even going one step further than that, maybe this is a good VR
yeah.
experience. You know, you kind of warp yourself into different rooms and you see the interplay between the characters.
Yeah. Get nauseous by looking at the space hole or whatever.
Yeah. So let's talk, before we talk about the plot, let's talk about space. How did you feel about this as a piece of sci-fi?
I mean, it's hard to talk about it in sci-fi without spoilers.
Yeah.
Space only existed in the form of, like, besides the AI stuff, because a lot of this game is about AI, is the zero gravity, like, hole where you could play zero-G basketball.
That was cool.
That was cool, except for there's not a second player to actually play zero-G basketball.
Yeah. Well, I mean, wait till next year with the patch and turns into Tacoma the eSport.
By the way, I kept thinking, like, man, there's probably going to be weird speedruns of this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Easily. I mean, there was a speedrun of Gone Home where you can solve it in 5 minutes or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but other than that, I mean, it this could have been on an oil rig.
Hmm. I mean, I liked some of the... I like the idea that that whole tube part was specifically made for zero-G.
Yeah.
It wasn't a hallway that then just had zero-G. It was circular.
That's true. It was consistent in how zero gravity works. Yeah. Yeah.
I liked...
In fact, yeah, that's a good point. It's probably the most realistic zero-G setup.
Well, I was thinking to myself, okay, because... One of the good things about the immersive sim type of games is you get to test like how closely a video game world can feel lived in.
Yeah.
I thought the getting down to the actual parts of the station that were spinning and had gravity was a smart way of doing it, where you had basically the elevator that you had to hook yourself into. Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense because gravity is changing and it would be really disorienting.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good.
There are zero-G boots, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, she was clamping herself to the floor in some of those areas. Magnet boots. Yeah. I thought the... I actually liked quite a bit the broader society that they had built.
Oh, yes, yeah.
It actually made me feel kind of nauseous the whole time, just thinking about the world that they lived in. Could have
been
the
zero-G.
I mean, it could have been the zero-G, but just the... Did you... I mean, everyone was going to... Basically, there was a complete and total breakdown of non-corporate governance.
Yes, it was like a completely corporatized future.
Yeah. Yeah, but in a way that at first seemed extreme because, you know, they made fictional regions. You know, I'm from... whatever they, I'm from Cascadia. It runs from British Columbia to Middle Oregon or something. But where it really started hitting home for me, and where it made me more and more nauseous, was people, there was no distinction between education and corporatism.
Yep.
So people went to Amazon University.
That's right.
Or they went to Carnival Cruise State or something.
What got me was the way that they operated currency, and they basically called currency like
loyalty
dollars, which in a weird way kind of goes back to like actual corporations printing money for their populace, well, like the citizens.
You get scrip as a miner and you can only use it in the company store, and you live in company barracks, and it was very,
it definitely mirrored that moment in our history.
And then there was the unionization of space workers, you know, whether we should go more towards machines or whether we should continue to have these people out here on the rigs.
This is like on the waterfront, but it's on the space front.
It was on the space front, but it also folded in the modern tension in the labor economy of employees versus contractors.
Yes. So this is that element I found way more interesting than the AI one.
Mm-hmm.
And I get like there's elements in there that are mixed, right? Yeah. Like people wanting to keep their jobs, and Obsolescence Day being like, humans are obsolete. Mm-hmm. We've been replaced by robots.
Yeah.
We need to, you know, replace the humans with robots, which maybe might be a good idea in space, considering
I actually felt like they probably gave that storyline somewhat of a short shrift.
Yeah.
Because there is a logic to it.
Totally, yeah. I mean, anytime there's, like, a dangerous element.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're meeting these people on the spaceship that, like, okay, fine, like, they're happy for the most part, but they are getting in romantic relationships with their coworkers and creating a potentially hazardous working environment for themselves and for others around them.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is a story as old as technology.
Yes.
But I feel like that the technology side of the story actually wasn't really delved into that deeply. Yeah. It was clear that... The good guys were the contractors, and the bad guys were anyone who was pushing the AI agenda.
Right. Yeah. I really do enjoy the contractor bit in particular, because the games industry is absolutely fucking full of paid contractors.
Dude, everything is.
Yeah, it's the tech world space. Is
fucking Uber.
Yeah. I'm pretty staunchly against the use of contractors for the most part. Like, it doesn't make a whole lot of corporate sense anyway, because oftentimes you're paying people to recycle, like, the amount of training that has to go into somebody that then becomes useless after 6 months because their contract is up. And how many companies get away with paying contractors but that aren't actual contractors?
Yeah.
Like, you think it's telling, right, that every single person on the ship in Tacoma is a contractor working, like, fundamentally necessary jobs.
Yeah.
Like, why is the guy that is, like, oh, I'm providing basic food and oxygen to this facility, and I'm a temporary employee.
Yeah, and in this case, temporary is a year or longer.
Yeah.
I mean, Bert and Nat were talking about, oh, just one more year. We can do it for one more year.
Yeah.
So basically, these poor fucking slobs are 1099s for years on end.
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Also risking their lives day in and day out.
They should have had a part where you're like, you're navigating a tunnel and you find the body of an intern.
It's like, I sent him to go get coffee.
Oh, he was unpaid. Oh no, Rick.
Yeah, I thought all of that stuff was just chillingly blasé and believable.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways this felt like a Black Mirror episode.
Yeah, very much so. I like that quite a bit. And then the AI stuff, without getting too much into spoilers, the AI stuff, I thought there was an interesting twist on it.
Yeah.
Because we always think about things like, oh, well, like, I'm going to get Siri 1.0 versus 2.0. Whereas in this one, how did they describe them? It was...
I loved, by the way, I love the AI on your first ship.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Minnie, I think her name is.
Talking.
Yeah, like, okay, yeah. Got it. Super cute.
And even...
Kawhi, one might say.
Even, what's the main character's name? Amy?
Amy.
Even Amy kind of makes fun of her as she leaves. God, well, how do they... They described the AI as, I think, redwood trees.
Oh,
where
yeah.
they only... They don't get obsolete. They just grow...
That's right.
Over the years. Yeah. And I thought that was an interesting interpretation of what an AI might be.
Plus,
someday.
They don't allow the AI to interact with one another for the most part. Like, they don't meet their own model. So it's not like a network of AI.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think we're probably breaching into spoiler territory now. I mean, I think, I started off on this game fairly rocky, but I ended up liking it more and more and more as the game went.
I think I crested in the middle and then came down a little bit towards the end. Yeah. I think, I mean, when all is said and done, like, it's hard, I think, for me to talk about this game literally 1 week after talking about Hellblade. Because I really, really, really enjoyed Hellblade.
Yeah.
And while this one is really good, I feel like the story elements themselves are just fine. And we'll get into the spoilers and we'll talk a bit about that, about why.
It's a normal story about normal people.
Yeah, but the characters feel like, to me, each of the characters feel like a D&D character. Like, somebody wrote down, like, where they're from, their age, their relationship to one other person on the ship, and one personal drama. And they checked all those boxes, and then they were done, you know? So it never really feels like I learn about someone in a really thorough way. I learn one of their main tensions in their life. I learn the relationship to the people on the ship.
Right.
And then I sort of move on. It doesn't really feel like... Each of the characters have their own really interesting or important arc because that arc is just shared sort of among them.
Yeah. It's hard to juggle that many. That's true.
It is. And I think as a result, the story itself lacks a lot of tension. And so it kind of made me a little ho-hum about it when all was said and done.
It was, it's also not as, because it's not as grounded, and it's not as tied to childhood as Gone Home.
Yeah.
I don't think it will land as hard for as many people.
Well, that and, like, you know, you and I grew up in Northern California.
Yeah.
We didn't grow up on space stations, so I am naturally tied slightly less to the Tacoma experience.
Yeah, that's true. It's, but I think the fact that they had a follow-up game in a similar vein, but were able to approach it with a pretty unique angle, means that they still probably have one or two more games in this style ahead of them.
Yeah. And I think they will improve upon them.
Yeah.
I just hope that the stories themselves also improve.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the stories definitely, these games live or die by it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you liked Edith Finch, you liked Edith Finch. You know, if you liked the story of Gone Home, you liked Gone Home. It's hard to, you can only stack so many things so high in these games to mess with the physics engine until you have to, like, play the actual plot.
Yeah. There was a part where you can stack cans that were already stacked.
Yeah.
And you could just slam on the button and stack the cans over and over and over again. And it felt really good. Yeah. Because you take the one from the bottom, they would drop, and you immediately put it back on top.
It's like those stacking competitions that the kids have.
The kids.
Okay. Spoilers?
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Tacoma.
How do you want to... How do you want to do? Are there certain characters that you specifically want to talk about?
Yeah, we could do that. We could start about the characters. Did you have any characters that were your favorite?
I liked Sarah a lot, actually.
The medic.
Yeah, the medic.
I agree, yeah. Well, so the reason I liked Sarah so much is it didn't feel like she had this pat one-off story. Like, her background story, right, of, oh, I accidentally killed a kid, and it wasn't really my fault. It was an AI's fault.
Yeah.
So going back to tension, right? Mm. Like, I think that's an interesting story.
Yeah.
But you don't ever get a sense that Sarah has a tension with her onboard AI in the form of Odin. Like, she has all these conversations with the AI of the ship.
That also struck me as very strange.
Yeah.
Like, I thought there would be a somewhat antagonistic.
Right.
Yeah.
Because she was let down by her previous AI. Like, you'd expect her to be a little bit more cautious or at the very least more insistent with Nat to be constantly checking up on the... on the well-being of Odin, but that doesn't really happen. But that kind of humdrum story aside, I think the relationship with her crew was really interesting.
Yeah.
And there's a specific scene where she's trying to convince Clive that, like, things are going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then she has a panic attack.
Yeah.
And Odin basically talks her through the panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience I thought was really cool, really well acted. The idea of her basically committing Nat to potentially die in cryo, I thought was interesting. Like, Sarah's a character that actually makes difficult choices.
Yeah.
Whereas it doesn't feel like anybody but Sarah on the ship has to make similar choices.
Yeah. Not to the point of, especially after, so what happens is there's an Apollo 13 situation.
Yes.
And they're running out of air and they need to get out. And I think she has to make the most life or death.
I mean, I guess Evie kind of decides. Yeah. The captain decides whether or not to put herself and Clive and maybe another person into cryo to buy time for Bert and Nat, like the two engineers, essentially, to find a way out so they can like use an escape drone or whatever.
I thought I liked her backstory. I liked her insistence on her kind of quiet insistence that she didn't do anything wrong. It also went back to the contractor thing where she could escape the contractor life, but she just is not willing to admit to guilt. What else? I think she also... It happens to her again, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this AI that is sabotaging her, even though the AI doesn't really want to do it. The AI is under orders to do it.
Yeah.
So she just has this weird life where... She lives in this world where AIs run a huge chunk of the world.
Yeah.
But she has to deal with it in a way that lives with the AI in parallel rather than just fighting against it as you would a traditional video game.
Totally, And I'm like that. I really enjoy that Sarah is, I mean, essentially the last one that sees it through, right? Like that is the one that figures out with the help of Odin that like it's all this sort of corporate space. Weyland-Yutani is at it again, boys.
It really was. Yeah, it really did. There was a very Weyland-Yutani vibe to it at the end.
I really like Nat's character as well, mostly because she has the voice of Claudia O'Doherty, which it's not Claudia O'Doherty, but Claudia O'Doherty is really funny Australian comedian that I just love listening to. So every time Nat would talk, I would sort of giggle at myself because I remembered her being funny.
Yeah.
But she's also kind of like a fun, quirky character.
Yeah, it's they walk a pretty... fine line and succeed at making an internet character without being an obnoxious internet character.
That's true.
I liked Evie quite a bit, especially after I read through some of her log entries about her getting reprimanded for trying to get Nat access to Odin.
Yeah.
Because she is the captain and she has to come down, you know, with the hard decisions on people like Nat, but she's also advocating for her kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah, totally. You know, that's an interesting part because the best parts about this game are the ways that it like takes very, very real world labor issues and puts them into like a fictional space, which, hey, guess what? That's why sci-fi is awesome.
Yeah.
So that and the close relationship, there's this great moment where Clive, who is like her lover or whatever, has a book given to him that's about like how to be chummy with your boss.
Yeah.
And one of them is like, I forget what he says, like, oh, sure thing, Captain, or something silly that.
It's utilize humorous similes for boss or something like that. And it's like, aye, aye, skipper. And then he says that exact same thing.
It's great.
Man, this guy's so awkward.
And then the relationship that Evie has with Nat, right, where behind the scenes she's advocating for her.
Yeah.
She can't make that forward.
Right.
I think that the relationship between bosses, like managers and lower management, like there is a strong benefit to the corporation to have their employees engage in very specific types of relationships.
Yeah.
And when you try to break out of that, you tend to get your wrist slapped. And that's true in real life. And to some extent, it makes sense. But there is something that is kind of creepy and unsettling about it. And you see that in action, I think, through Evie's character and Clive's character as well.
Yeah. I like that quite a bit. What else? What was it? Andrew?
Yeah, the botanist.
The botanist. The family stuff was the most, I felt like he maybe wasn't a super interesting character, but he gave you insight, as to how the broader world worked.
This is where like the university stuff came into play, right?
And his willingness to spend his loyalty bucks to get one of the condos to, you know, rent out or whatever.
I thought that spend money to make money.
You gotta spend loyalty to get loyalty. I don't fucking know how that works. I mean, I thought...
Although, side note, now that the stock is plummeting, that condo is, like, worthless.
I was thinking about that. Like, I mean, what does this mean for all of these people? I mean, I guess that's... maybe that's the final question we ask, but we also had Odin. That was more of a character than I thought he would be.
Yeah.
Especially as, so Odin is given orders by the creepy CEO of, what was it? Venturis? Was
that Venturis. Ace Ventura, I believe his name was.
Was to sabotage the ship, make it look like an accident, and therefore they could push legislation autonomizing everything.
Yeah.
But because Odin couldn't violate the laws of robotics,
yep,
he had to do it, but then he could put the humans in a position to discover what he had done.
Yes, precisely.
Which I thought was a pretty clever way of handling it.
I totally agree, yeah. Actually. And that story, so the final twist of Amy is part of the AI Liberation Front. I don't know how I felt about
you
that.
You didn't like that?
I saw a pamphlet and I was like, oh, I think I get it. And that was like a third of the way into the game.
Yeah.
But no, the idea that AI, like the message here being one in which if we want our AI to be ethical, then we want them to be more human-like. And if we want them to be human-like, like you need humans.
Yeah.
So it's not, this isn't a game that's just like, oh, AI is bad. Like, don't take jobs. Like, we don't want automation.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, we need to make sure that all of the systems that we're putting into place, no matter where they're at, have humanity at their center. And I think this was a game about, like, here's what humanity looks like. And here's how even that messy humanity can sort of make AI better in a way.
Yeah.
You know?
Or at least maybe the two things, humanity and AI, maybe they're now symbiotic at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
Humans, it's too late. They can't get rid of AI because if you're to say AI is actually sentient, then you're morally prohibited from killing it.
Yeah.
Well, so like, you just have to live with it now.
Yeah. And there's a great, there's a scene where Nat is basically training and first meeting Odin, right?
Yeah.
And in order to make them more human, like there's all these measurements of like, oh, ask them these questions. Mm-hmm. Like what happens if there's a children on a train and all that kind of stuff. But when you look at the AI that failed Sarah in her past, it's got really low rankings because people weren't essentially doing that work.
Right.
They weren't actively trying to make an AI more human.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of an interesting message.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that stuff was good. I thought that it's also kind of like Gone Home in that it's essentially a happy story at the end.
It is, yeah.
Which is, maybe this is going to be a signature of this studio where...
Stick it to the man!
I mean, in an industry and a world that is mostly obsessed with dramatic and or tragic stories...
Yeah.
We've gone two for two now where everything looks pretty bleak, and then all of a sudden at the end it's like, no, it was fine.
Everyone's fine, yeah. I mean, I think the problem I had with the AI Liberation Front is like that is a part of a much larger conflict than the one we experienced.
Yeah.
And so this big reveal that like, oh, you're actually playing an AI Liberation, it didn't feel really tied to the actual events of the story.
Yeah.
Like maybe it would have been more interesting to have her like, I don't know, like destroy the AI or like maybe even meet the crew. Like maybe she's the one that wakes them up out of cryo. And she, I don't know. You know what I mean?
There's all kinds of debate or something. Should we take this AI off? Some people could be, hey, Odin tried to kill us. We should get rid of it.
Yeah.
Or Odin was just doing what he had to, but he also saved us. Right. So let's,
There could have been all kinds of like weird conversations. Mm. What I went back to though was Duncan Jones's Moon.
Mm.
I don't know if you've seen
it. I never saw it.
So spoiler alert for Moon, but like the end of Moon, he does get back to Earth, and it is it's essentially like a version of this. Like a corporation is really, really bad, and he like reveals information, but he's also doomed to die, and you know he's going to die, right? But there's a sort of investigative journalism success story in the fact that information is out there, and we don't need 100% resolution because the point is that justice will be dealt with, right?
Yeah.
Whereas this is a weird story where it's all a happy ending, but there are other repercussions, right? Like, they throw this corporation under the bus, but they were saved from the ship by their competitor.
Yeah.
Do we believe the competitor is any better? Like, Carnival Cruise Lines is like, fucking, I mean, talking about cruise ships alone, right? And we know how much illegal bullshit cruise liners get away with in the real world because they're in international waters.
Yeah.
It's absurd.
Yeah.
The idea that the universe is a better place after Tacoma, a little bit too optimistic, and I would have preferred them being like, there are much larger issues than just like this AI's personal well-being.
I mean, the most immediate story is Odin is rescued, he's safe, and he gets added to the community
their
of
fucking
AI
archive of AI somewhere. Yeah. Yeah,
but it's kind of like the immediate story is a happy ending. Yes. The broader world is like, well, I don't know. I mean, are any of the crew of the Tacoma ever going to be able to see their families ever again?
Yeah, they're like, oh, we're on Jupiter for 7 months.
Yeah, and also this shit is all. Well, I guess maybe Amy is kind of going to sabotage the communications or something, but
yeah.
I mean, they can hunt them down on Jupiter. Like,
yeah, I know.
Jupiter's
right?
That big ass planet.
Yeah, we know exactly
like,
where it's at, guys.
Yeah, like,
yeah, I mean, I think it would have been more interesting to confront that difficult future that would be ahead of them,
yeah.
Or more closely tie Amy's story on the ship to theirs. Like, what if she was a Union, or just like a fucking like a ratable anarchist, you know? Like,
well, I mean, if she's part of the Liberation Front, she's probably viewed as.
She should have fucking blown up Tacoma. You know what I mean? They should have blown that ship up.
I mean, by stealing the. Also, I like that they called it wetware. I thought that was pretty gross. But I mean, you know, by stealing it, she's probably stolen what, billions of dollars worth of corporate.
Yeah.
You know, corporate AI money or
something. Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. I was wondering how the game was going to end, and then when they pulled the old switcher, I was like, ah, okay, ties it up quite nicely.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, I don't know, I was not expecting as fast a turn there.
That's true.
But it hurries to the end, you know,
Definitely, once
you actually get through all that.
I think part of it, too, is they play with the expectation in much the same way that Gone Home plays with horror.
Yeah.
Tacoma plays with the dangerous AI expectation.
No, I mean, it's like System Shock 2. Again, Immersive Sim, Shodan or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Odin, Shodan, come on. Like, it's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
And then there are those moments, right, where Nat is talking to him and it's been wiped and it says someone's wiped it.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, Odin is clearly, like, hiding the fact that he's a monster when really he's just a nice guy and it's the man that is monstrous.
I'm not even supposed to be here today.
Yeah.
That was good. Overall,
I think it was fine.
Yeah,
I think it's fine. Yeah,
I think there are points of it that are extremely clever.
Yeah,
and then overall, if you are into, it's kind of one of those things where if you are into the genre, then fans of the genre will rejoice.
Well, I would just say, like,
I would say Gone Home though is a better mass appeal game.
Yes.
You know, where people could really.
That's a good point, right? Like, I don't think I would push Tacoma to someone who's not, like, never plays games. I think Gone Home is much more.
I told people that didn't really play video games that you should probably play Gone Home to, like, just check in on where video games are at.
Yeah.
And this is a little different.
Totally. Yeah. But I think if you're a gamer, play Hellblade first. It's only $10 more, man. Tacoma's $20.
It's only 10 loyalty points more.
It's only
more.
10 loyalty bucks.
Oh my god. Steam University.
Steam loyalty bucks.
Should we just enroll right now?
Dude, if I could sell bullshit from my space station for loyalty bucks.
Oh, you can. You can sell your cards for 5 cents each.
That's true, actually, yeah.
Pretty soon you'll be able to buy fucking Gabe Newell's apartments on the moon.
I didn't get any cards because I played on your family sharing account.
Shit.
So really, I'm sticking it to the man.
You can live in my lunar condo. That
how many contractors do you think Steam employs, Valve? A lot.
Gosh.
Then why would you run, like, I would be running the leanest ship I fucking could if I were at Steam.
But my thing is, I bet they don't even employ contractors.
Just interns.
They do nothing. I mean, based
off
the Steam, the Steam customer service and the various types of projects they do.
That's true.
I mean, they're even more in. They're full AI. They did. They somehow sabotaged Half-Life 3, blamed it on humans,
and then
turned it all over
to
the AI.
That's a very good point.
And now they're just a hat making machine.
Yeah. Next announcement, it's like Dota 2 space tours.
And then the fucking itch.io people are infiltrating Steam to grab the AI out of it.
Yeah.
I don't know how we got here, but it's true.
It's also funny how we talked about that Star Wars experience.
Oh, yeah.
That's not that far off from what they're talking about here.
No.
Isolated, immersed code. Send your family to space.
Yeah, exactly. They even had little advertisements in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a chilling portent of our dark future. Tacoma.
Yeah.
Cool. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net university is where you can get your loyalty degree in
7 short years if we choose to renew your contract.
Oh my god. At least we're credited, unlike Phoenix and how many other fucking bullshit.
Take that, DeVry.
Yeah, internet schools. Come on by, leave us a review. Helps us find new listeners. We're basically wherever you can find podcasts.
Cool. All right. Until next time, everyone. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Ciao.